So it happened again last week. I had to sit helplessly by as a family member agonized over what to do with their loved one because no plan had been put into place and the family never had a conversation together about end-of-life care wishes. And this one was particularly difficult. Steve's mother, Sally, had been diagnosed with cancer and treatments did not work. And over a year ago, she decided it was time to let nature take its course. Sally lived alone, but Steve was only blocks away. For a while, she did pretty good. But just last week, she started to have some declines, and the doctor felt it was time for hospice. They set up an appointment with me and my team, and when we arrived, Sally was slumped in her living room chair. She had difficulty keeping her eyes open, and when we spoke to her, she didn't seem to be registering our words. Her responses to us were slurred and nonsensical. This was an even deeper decline than Steve had seen over the weekend. We inquired about an advanced care directive. Had Sally ever created one? Did Steve know who she may have selected as her agent to speak for her when she could no longer speak for herself? Steve said he thought that maybe she had created one at her last hospital visit. We called the hospital and found out that this was not the case. Sally was still legally her own person. She had never had a discussion or indicated who she would like to be her healthcare power of attorney. Without this, our hands were tied. And Steve's hands were tied. Because Sally was not coherent, we couldn't trust that she understood that we were going to sign her on for hospice. And we could not trust that she even wanted Steve as her agent. Sally couldn't stay home alone like this. So what did we do? Well, thankfully, the social worker on my team helped Steve to admit his mother to the hospital. There, two doctors could declare her incompetent. And because the hospital would not release her without a plan for care at home or at a facility, they could help rush through the need for a court order to declare Steve as her guardian. Because she was still legally her own person with no record or conversation held about her wishes for end-of-life care, this decision had to go to the courts. Steve was in anguish. He was still unsure if he was making the right choices for his mom. We felt helpless, and yet this was the best we could do. I've shared this story before. Maybe you have heard me do so. I believe that my patients are teaching me all the time, every single day, and so I offer this story again so that Sally's lessons will not be in vain, so that she can still be teaching all of you. Please, please do not let this story happen to you. As most of you know, I am a hospice chaplain. And yes, I look at death nearly every day. And yes, I have a strange comfort with the dying that might be a little odd. But I guess it's a plus in my field. My husband jokingly calls me the death maiden. Today I want to talk to you about how sharing your wishes for end-of-life care is so important, not only for funeral planning, but also for end-of-life medical care. Each day in my work, I see how beautifully we can create our own desires for leaving this world. In my hospice, we try hard to get families and loved ones to have these conversations with one another about end-of-life care, and our team gently but firmly encourages families to sit down and discuss just how they would like their end-of-life care to be. I believe that if we're prepared, when death comes, like in Mary Oliver's beautiful poem, we'll be able to step through that door, not with fear or regret, but with full curiosity about what it's going to be like in that dark cottage. Many of you here know and miss fellow UU and Fox Valley end-of-life care advocate, Dr. Nancy Homburg. As she's retired now and lives closer to her daughter, Dr. Homburg had always so beautifully shared that end-of-life care planning allows us to express the uniqueness of every soul and the legacy that only we can leave this world. For me, this is deeply holy work. Without planning, our days, celebrations of beauty and love can struggle to happen. With 90% of us dying of one or more chronic illnesses, death is not often a surprise. We can create a plan to help our wishes come true. So I wonder, why is this conversation so difficult to have? Why do we get stuck and stall with each other like Cindy was sharing in her family? I hear and see so many obstacles from families and patients in my work. Some families will tell us, don't say the word hospice, because if we do, we'll make dying happen. If we're honest with how much time a person has left, they'll just give up, or that talking about it will make it happen faster. My heart goes out to families who are suddenly faced with a terminal diagnosis or medical treatments that are no longer working, and hospice needs to be brought on board. But this is nonsense. Tiptoeing around this topic is never helpful. And usually I find when we sit down and talk honestly about it with the patient and the family, they're glad that someone is finally bringing this topic out into the light. Studies show that patients who have a plan for their end-of-life care actually have a better quality of life and actually live a little bit longer. And their families are much more at peace because they know exactly what their loved ones wanted them to do. Doesn't that sound better than what Steve and his mother Sally had to struggle through? You can make these choices and these decisions known and be more at peace yourself. So what kind of decisions are we talking about when we're making medical end-of-life care choices? Generally, most healthcare power of attorney documents have you designate an agent that will speak for you when you can no longer make decisions yourself. And this is a very important choice. It should be someone that you know you can trust to carry out your wishes. Sometimes this isn't always family. You know who's in your circle of loving and who will stand up for your wishes. This form will also walk you through your wishes for where you might want to live. Would you be okay with moving to a facility if need be, or do you want to remain in your home? What about feeding tubes or hydration if you can no longer swallow? Do you want medical treatments, surgeries, or transfusions to prolong your life, even if you are terminal? If your heart were to stop, would you want CPR and try to start it again? I know these are very tough questions, but they all point to the quality of life that you may or may not want to have. And knowing your answers or your loved one's answers to these questions can give great peace of mind to everyone involved. And truthfully, it's not just about the medical aspects of end of life that are important to share with loved ones. As a chaplain, I know the peace of mind that also comes from having peace of heart. You can also direct your family and friends about music and the environment you'd like to have around you near the end. You can specify if you want your pastor to visit and things you want your family to remember about you. I know for a fact that Christina and Leah would love for you to meet with them to work out your personal wishes for your memorial services. And as the death maiden in my family, Joel and I often talk about the music we want at our memorial services. Sometimes updating our wishes as we learn new songs. Today's Wonderbox song of Spirit in the Sky is one that I want at my service. I love the joy it offers and the hope for something else to happen next. But if I never told anyone, if I never mentioned that I only want the first verse played in a loop, I'd be kind of mad, although I'd be dead. But I would actually find those other verses kind of offensive. As someone who walks alongside folks at end of life, let me tell you that without your instructions, your memorial service might not reflect your ideas or theologies at all. And truthfully, this is how often our aging years play out. You may have always lived here in Appleton and even outlined plans with Christina and Leah about your memorial service desires. But then your partner dies and you have trouble living alone in your home anymore. And so suddenly you move out of town, closer to siblings or children or a dear friend. And maybe there isn't a UU congregation there, or you're no longer able to drive, so you can't go there and make a connection like you have here at the fellowship. And so you might find yourself at the end of life without a faith community surrounding you like you have here, and this is a magical place. But you'd be surprised how often this story plays out like that for family members. So then your loved ones might put together a small memorial service at the closest funeral home with no church or minister of your own. Often a retired minister from the community steps in to officiate, and guess what? Without knowing your wishes or your thoughts on faith, your family might end up hearing that minister's thoughts on faith. Believe me, I've seen it. And for most of us UUs, that sounds like our worst nightmare. By sharing your wishes and your desires with your family and with the ministers here, you can be very specific and clear about your desires. And I would suggest once you do that, make copies of those wishes for your service and give them to your power of attorney so that no matter where you end up living down the road, your memorial service will reflect the uniqueness of who you are and your desired legacy. I often tell my patients and families that I know coming onto hospice can be a terrible thing. To hear that you may only have 6 months or so left to live can be scary news. But there's also a bit of light and beauty there. Because you see, we now know we're on this journey. And we get to know the last things that we say to people. We might be able to give things to people or spend time with them or write letters or give photos. Any number of things can create a legacy for the patient, can be done during this time. And it can be a beautiful time. I recall a lovely summer day when my team worked hard to get one gentleman out to the lake for one last day of fishing. As a chaplain, I've seen very difficult family issues resolved, like forgiveness or reconnection or redemption that can occur between the patient and their loved ones during this time. And this happens in ways that could never happen when somebody dies suddenly of a heart attack or in a car accident. Many of my family share that their loved one's end of life was actually quite beautiful, and they were honored to have been able to be with them during the final time. You see, most of us, 90% of us in this very room, will be able to create our own end-of-life care wishes and take advantage of that time in ways that leave ourselves and our loved ones feeling closure, feeling peace, and release at end of life. 90% of us will be able to share those unique wishes of our souls with our loved ones in ways that bring us meaning and purpose before we leave this world. And yet, somehow, we shy away from doing it. I'm not going to publicly shame you, so I won't ask for a raising of hands, but I wonder how many of you are over 18 years of age? And I wonder how many of you have created your own healthcare power of attorney documents. I know, 18, 20, even 30 years of age seems way too early to think about dying, right? But it's not. It's funny because Americans are the only people in the world who think that dying is optional. We think we or our loved ones will live forever. Let's stop pretending that this isn't going to happen and make important changes so that you do not end up like Steve and his mother, Sally. Let me tell you another story about a gentleman that did have these conversations, and you'll see how his life ended with beauty, with creativity, and with peace. Barney was an avid outdoorsman. Fishing was his life, something he did as often as he could, even to his wife's dismay. But fishing was also something he did with all of his children and all of his grandchildren. He'd been struggling with COPD and other ailments for years, but he also knew he wanted to be in charge of his final days. He chose to create his healthcare power of attorney document with his son as his agent and his wife as the backup. He indicated on the document that he did not want feeding tubes or CPR or surgeries. He was clear that he wanted to remain in his home. And truthfully, that was a hard one to honor as his care became more intense. But his family knew his wishes, and they set up schedules, and they took turns so that someone was with him around the clock. Was it easy? No. But they had a clear plan, and they worked hard to stick to it. Hospice was brought on board, and with that came a registered nurse who managed his health care alongside his primary care physician. A nursing assistant came twice a week to bathe and help with personal cares. His team also included a social worker who helped the family with funeral home arrangements and with community services that could help him stay in his home. And I was his chaplain, offering support, opportunities for reflection and forgiveness and celebration, not just for Barney, but for his entire family. Barney knew that fishing was his legacy to his family, so he gathered his fishing poles and his lures, and he matched one to each, and he gave one to each of his children and to his grandchildren. He carefully assigned even his prize fishing taxidermy. He chose music and songs that he loved to be playing during his final days. He and his family worked together picking photos and songs for his memorial service. And there was a lot of laughter and storytelling that ensued during these days. He got to hear and see what his family cherished most about him at this time. He made a list of everyone he wanted to see. He did his best to be sure that he went to them or they came to him. And I think only one visit had to be done on the phone, a call to his brother who lived out of state and had health issues of his own. He was the gentleman who my team helped to have one last day out on the dock, fishing from his wheelchair with his son and his grandson by his side. I never saw such a huge smile on anyone like I saw on Barney's face that day. And so his last days arrived. Barney was in bed with music he loved playing. His closest family was around him with assurances that he had seen and spoken to everyone that he wanted to contact. Like the words in Mary Oliver's poem, he did not find himself sighing or frightened or full of argument. He was at peace, and he died gently in his sleep. Barney created his final days. He wrote the story of how he wanted it to be, and his family read it back to him because they knew. They knew exactly what he wanted. He left a meaningful legacy to his family, and they too were at peace and ready to let him go. You too can create a wonderful and meaningful plan for your final days, and let me tell you, it will be the best gift that you give your loved ones ever. Because when your health starts to fail, or maybe you're in an accident that requires others to make decisions for you, your loved ones will know exactly what you want to do. After services today at 12:15, there's going to be a workshop of end-of-life care planning, and you're welcome to attend. There you can ask some deeper questions about how to do this for yourself and for your loved ones. If you haven't done this work, I encourage you to do so. Make it a goal of yours to do this before next summer. We spend so much of our time during our lives creating our schedules for work or free time in ways that bring us more joy and happiness. We can do the same for end-of-life care. We might not know when our lives will end, but let's be honest. None of us gets out of here alive. Create and share your end-of-life care plans. Plan your own individual ideas about what you would like. Share your soul and give peace to yourself and to your loved ones. You'll be glad that you did. May it be so.